Well, maybe I'll start at the beginning in Boston. Although, as many of you may know, this year marks 50 years since Srila Prabhupada left India on August 13th. And arrived in America in Boston on September 17th. So this was a remarkable event. And a momentous one. And I am going to read a verse in purport because from Srimad Bhagavatam, because I feel the verse in purport really are very relevant to Srila Prabhupada. His whole life was lived according to Srimad Bhagavatam, and you could say his life was an example of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I will relate it to his departure from India and arrival in America, and then some personal experiences. Actually, I'm going to read both the verses, because the second one follows the first one, and they both really describe Srila Prabhupada. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8. So text 5. Pravishta karna randrena svanam bhava saroruham dunoti shamalam krishna salilasya yata sarat. The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, that is Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is said that a single pure devotee of the Lord can deliver all the fallen souls of the world. This is a very strong statement. And Srila Prabhupada exhibited such power. Thus, one who is actually in the confidence of a pure devotee, like Narada or Shukadeva Goswami, and is thus empowered by one's spiritual master, as Narada was by Brahmaji, can not only deliver himself from the clutches of Maya or illusion, but can deliver the whole world by his pure and empowered devotional strength. In other words, when one, faithfully serves a pure devotee, one is empowered by that pure devotee to deliver not only himself by his Krishna consciousness, but the whole world. And such was the case of Srila Prabhupada and his spiritual master, and his spiritual master with his spiritual master. These are extraordinarily powerful acharyas. Srila Prabhupada, his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and his predecessor, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's very unusual to have three such empowered personalities, like one after the other, after the other. During the rainy season, all the waters of the river, of the rivers become muddy. But in the month of July, August, the autumn season, when there is a slight rainfall, the muddy waters of the rivers all over the world become at once clear. By addition of some chemical, a small reservoir of water, like that of a metropolitan waterworks tank, can be cleared. But by such a tiny effort, it is not possible to clear up all the reservoirs of water, like the rivers. A powerful, pure devotee of the Lord, however, can deliver not only his personal self, but also many others in his association. There is a statement in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana, that only one who is empowered by the potency of Krishna can propagate the Sankirtan movement all over the world. In other words, the cleansing of the polluted heart by other methods, like the culture of empiric knowledge or mystic gymnastics, can simply cleanse one's own heart. But devotional service to the Lord is so powerful that it can cleanse the heart of the people in general by the devotional service of the pure, empowered devotee. A true representative of the Lord, like Narada, Shukadeva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, and later Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Sri Mad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, etc., can deliver all people by their empowered devotional service. Are you able to hear? By sincere efforts to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, one realizes his constitutional relationship with the Lord. I'll skip ahead a little. Purification of the heart by culture of knowledge or mystic yoga may be all right for the time being for an individual person. But it is like the cleansing of a small quantity of stagnant water by chemical processes. Such clarification of water may stand for the time being and the sediments settle down. But by a slight agitation, everything becomes muddy. The idea is that devotional service to the Lord is the only method of cleansing the heart for good. Whereas other methods may be superficially good for the time being, there is a risk of becoming muddy again due to agitation of the mind. Devotional service to the Lord with specific attention for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and always is the best recommended method for liberation from the clutches of illusion. So are we all clear on what we've read so far?
Yes.
All right, so now we come to the verse and purport that I specifically wanted to discuss. Text 6. Dautatma Purusha Krishna Padamulam Namunchati Muktasarva Pariklesha Pantasva Sharanam Yata. Please repeat. Dautatma, whose heart has been cleansed.
Whose heart has been cleansed.
Purusha,
Purusha,
the living being.
The living being.
Krishna,
Krishna,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Padamulam,
Padamulam,
the shelter of the lotus feet.
The shelter of the lotus feet.
Na,
na,
never,
never.
Munchati,
Munchati,
gives up.
Gives up.
Mukta,
Mukta,
liberated.
Liberated.
Sarva,
Sarva,
all.
All.
Pariklesha,
Pariklesha,
of all miseries of life.
Of all miseries of life.
Panta,
Panta,
the traveler.
The traveler.
Swasharanam,
Swasharanam,
in his own abode.
In his own abode.
Yata,
Yata,
as it were.
As it were.
Translation. A pure devotee of the Lord, whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service, never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him. As a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who is not a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord Krishna is not completely cleansed in the heart. But a perfectly cleansed person never quits the devotional service of the Lord. In discharging such devotional service, as ordered by Brahmaji to Narada in the preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes a representative of the Lord engaged in preaching work meets various so-called difficulties. This was exhibited by Lord Nityananda when he delivered the two fallen souls, Jagai and Madhai. Does anyone know the story of what happened to Lord Nityananda when he went to deliver Jagai and Madhai? Yes.
He got injured by one of them, hit in the head.
Yes.
He wanted to give them some holy name, and they weren't really into that. And instead of just saying no, they wanted to do, like, injure him.
Yes. Yes. Actually, yes, in brief, that is exactly what happened. Lord Nityananda, most merciful original spiritual master, he, Jagai and Madhai were like drunken, really very aggressive and horrible people. I mean, they would burn people's homes, loot their homes, and terrorize people, and they're almost always drunk. And so Nityananda Prabhu wanted to deliver them. And Madhai, he became so infuriated with Nityananda Prabhu just for asking him to chant the name of Krishna and hear the message of Krishna and serve Krishna, that he picked up a pot and threw it at Nityananda Prabhu's head, which caused blood to flow. And even then he wanted to attack him and kill him. So this is one example. Sometimes a representative of the Lord engaged in preaching work meets various so-called difficulties. This was exhibited by Lord Nityananda when he delivered the two fallen souls, Jagai and Madhai. And similarly, Lord Jesus Christ was crucified by the non-believers. But such difficulties are very gladly suffered by the devotees in preaching, because in such activities, although apparently very severe, the devotees of the Lord feel transcendental pleasure because the Lord is satisfied. I'll give a very simple example of my own experience on a much lower level. But I was printing a magazine for Srila Prabhupada. And one evening, the rain just came pouring down. And in Calcutta, at least then, there was no real drainage system. So the water just kept getting higher and higher. And, you know, I was literally wading through the water. And in that far area of North Calcutta, there were hardly any cars. In those days, only a wealthy person owned a car. And there were very few taxis. Most of the transportation was by rickshaws. But the tendency of the rickshaw drivers when it rains is they pull down the hood of the rickshaw and go to sleep on the seat of the rickshaw. And I've seen that many times. So there was nothing on the street. And the water is getting higher and higher. And every once in a while, a taxi would come down the street, and, you know, I'd try to wave it down, but they were all full. There were no empty taxis roaming the streets in that situation. But I felt great pleasure, because the only reason I was there was to serve Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes we may be in a situation where we're doing service, but at the same time the circumstances are quite pleasurable for our senses or our mind. So it may be a little hard to distinguish why we're there. You know, is it because of the whatever, beautiful natural scenery, or the good prasad, or the, you know, congenial friendship and fellowship. But in this case, there was nothing. Nothing but a downpour of rain and rising waters. And those were not pure, clean waters that were rising. They were muddy and whatever, whatever. But I was extremely happy because I was there. I was there to serve Srila Prabhupada. There's no other reason on earth that I would have been there. And eventually I made it back after many hours. And I don't even remember how I got back in the end, but what I remember was just being so happy serving my spiritual master in the rising water. So such difficulties are very gladly suffered by the devotees in preaching, because in such activities, although apparently very severe, the devotees of the Lord feel transcendental pleasure because the Lord is satisfied. Prahlad Maharaj suffered greatly, but still he never forgot the lotus feet of the Lord. Do you all know the story of Prahlad Maharaj? You don't. Who else doesn't? Okay. Well, anyway, his father, Prahlad's father, was a great tyrant who was against God and the devotees and God consciousness. And Prahlad was only 5 years old, and his only fault was that he was a devotee. And his father didn't like it. And his father was used to being feared and obeyed by everyone. And here his five-year-old son was, to his mind, openly defying him by chanting the Lord's name and praising the Lord's glories. So his father, was such a cruel tyrant that he tried to kill his own son in many terrible ways. But throughout all of these trials and tribulations, Prahlad always remembered the Lord. And he was never afraid, and he was never sorry. He was always happy within himself. Prahlad Maharaj suffered greatly, but still he never forgot the lotus feet of the Lord. This is because a pure devotee of the Lord is so purified in his heart that he cannot leave the shelter of Lord Krishna in any circumstances. There is no self-interest in such service. Now, devotees suffer different kinds of tests along the way. And Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna tested him in two ways. First, Krishna tested him by taking everything away from him. And then Krishna tested him by giving him everything. And these are tests, you know. Do we, you know, we have something and Krishna takes it away. So are we going to chase after what Krishna took from us? Or are we going to stay with Krishna? And of course, Prabhupada stayed with Krishna. And then, later, Krishna gave Prabhupada everything. I mean, he had, you know, beautiful temples all over the world. He gave the example of, well, Jawaharlal Nehru. He was the first Prime Minister of India. And when he was in England, at great expense, for the sake of his prestige, he kept one British servant. And Srila Prabhupada said that he had hundreds and thousands of British and American servants. And he didn't pay them anything. To the contrary, they were giving him whatever they could. So that Krishna gave Prabhupada everything. But that's also a test. Am I going to try to enjoy all this and forget Krishna? Or am I going to stay fixed in remembrance of Krishna and use it all in Krishna's service? So in that way, Prabhupada was tested in both ways. The progress of culturing knowledge by the gyanis, or the bodily gymnastics by the yogis, are ultimately given up by the respective performers. But a devotee of the Lord cannot give up the service of the Lord, for he is ordered by his spiritual master. Pure devotees like Narada and Nityananda Prabhu take up the order of the spiritual master as the sustenance of life. So this is really the essence of any pure devotee. And it was certainly the essence of Srila Prabhupada, who was ordered by his spiritual master to spread Krishna consciousness in the English language all over the world. They do not mind what becomes of the future of their lives. Now that's really depending on Guru and Krishna. And that was true of Srila Prabhupada. In fact, I'm going to read from Srila Prabhupada's talk on the disappearance day of his spiritual master in Los Angeles in 1968. And the way he speaks, it very much exemplifies what is stated in the purport. These are Srila Prabhupada's own words. 32 years ago in Bombay, this was spoken in 1968, sometime around the 9th or 10th of December, Guru Maharaj was indisposed, and he was staying in Jagannath Puri on the seashore. And I wrote him a letter. My dear master, your other disciples, brahmachari, sannyasi, they are rendering you direct service, and I am a householder. I cannot live with you. I cannot serve you nicely. So I do not know. How can I serve you? His reply was dated 13th December 1936. In that letter he wrote, My dear such and such, I'm very glad to receive your letter. I think you should try to push our movement in English. That was his writing. And that will do good to you and to the people who will help you. That means us, who's coming forward to help Srila Prabhupada's mission. That was his instruction. I took that order of my spiritual master very seriously, but I did not think that I'd have to do such and such thing. I was at that time a householder, but this is the arrangement of Krishna. If we strictly try to serve the spiritual master, his order, then Krishna will give us all facilities. Hare Krishna. That is the secret. Although there was no possibility, I never thought, but I took it a little seriously by studying a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on the Bhagavad Gita in connection with the verse Vayavai Sayatmika Buddhir Ekeha Kuru Nandana, Bhagavad Gita 2:41. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives this commentary that we should take up the words from the spiritual master as our life and soul. We should carry out the instruction, the specific instruction of the spiritual master, very rigidly, without caring for our personal benefit or loss. So he's really expressing in his own words exactly what the purport to the verse of Srimad Bhagavatam says. Anyway, there's more.
What is this spiritual master?
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In fact, later on you can come closer to this little form of Prabhupada, and on the table there is a little round photograph of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Then he says, a Vaishnav, or devotee of the Lord, his life is dedicated for the benefit of the people. You know, most of you belong to the Christian community, how Lord Jesus Christ said that for your sinful activities he has sacrificed himself. That is the determination of a devotee of the Lord. They don't care for personal comforts. Because they love Krishna or God, therefore, they love all living entities. So similarly, you should learn. This Krishna consciousness movement means to become Vaishnav and feel for the suffering humanity. So now I'll relate an incident from Calcutta. This took place after Srila Prabhupada had gone to America and begun the movement and returned to India with some disciples. And he thought that the Indians want to imitate the Americans. So if they see that the Americans have taken to Krishna consciousness, then they may imitate that, and they'll also take up Krishna consciousness, which is their original culture. And he called us his dancing white elephants. Hmm. It was like quite a sensation when Prabhupada returned to India with his dancing white elephants. In fact, when we arrived in Bombay, Prabhupada came with one group over the Pacific, and came to Calcutta, and our group came across the Atlantic to Bombay, and then Prabhupada met us there. And, I mean, people were literally shedding tears of joy. I mean, they couldn't believe it, that, you know, Americans and Europeans had completely embraced their culture. Like, it was quite a sensation. In fact, once we were doing chanting in front of the government building in Bombay, and wherever we went, that huge crowds would gather around us. And this huge government building, they're like, it was like, I don't know, maybe six stories high or eight stories, but really long. And we could see like faces in every window looking at us. And eventually some official came down and asked us if we could move on, because he said, there's not a single person in the whole building who's at work. And the whole machinery of the state government has come to a complete halt. So, anyway, it was glorious. But, you know, Prabhupada had many interests all over the world, and he left India. And during one period, we were quite poor, yeah, I mean, monetarily. And the main program for raising funds was life membership. But Srila Prabhupada said we shouldn't use the life membership money for our own maintenance. It was 50% for temple construction and 50% for book production. And it was hard to buy food, and, you know, very few, most of the milk was buffalo milk, but which isn't really very good, like cow's milk is. And also, a lot of times they put chalk in it. They did many things. Yeah. So, yeah, the condition was quite bad. There was one devotee named Sudama Vipra. By nature, he had a very strong build, but he was so famished that, you know, the Aarti ceremony. So there's a lamp with they put ghee in it, and that they burn it, and after the Aarti, he would like squeeze the ghee wicks and try to like get some nutrition. So it was quite austere. Anyway, Prabhupada came, and the devotees went into his, I mean, eventually, one by one they were complaining. Eventually called all the devotees together and asked to hear from them. And he listened, and he tried to make arrangements to help them. But in the end, you know, his mood sort of changed, and he said that, in his life he never complained, because his motto was always everything for Krishna and nothing for me. And he said, you know, when he was crossing the ocean, he had two heart attacks at sea. And he, then even in America, he had so many difficulties. He had some buzzing in his ear. He had many difficulties. He said he never complained because he his motto was always everything for Krishna, nothing for me. And one of his lady disciples, Yamuna Devi, she was also there at the time, and she just spoke a little about it, and I'll read what she said about that, what she remembered from that meeting. When we were in Calcutta near the end of 1971, the temple was in low consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada called the devotees together to his room. The mood was very sober, but Srila Prabhupada wanted to hear from everyone. He went around the room and asked each devotee what they thought was wrong in the temple. And each person gave his or her realization. And everyone else listened to that realization. Then Srila Prabhupada spoke. He said that we were all there because he had followed the instructions of his Guru Maharaj and come to the West. And he then added with great emphasis, "Do you think it was easy for me to leave India all alone and come to America? None of us had ever really thought like that, whether it was easy or hard. We had just assumed that he had done it by Krishna's mercy." Then he continued, "Do you think that it was easy for me when I was in Butler, Pennsylvania, and I opened the refrigerator and there was cat food next to my vegetables? Do you think that was easy?" The devotees almost began to cry because they began to understand what Prabhupada had done for us, and it hadn't been easy. He had come from a place where his mother was carried in a palanquin from one house to the other. He was from another culture, almost like another planet. And yet he had come to the West with a trunk full of books and $7. We knew the prayers he wrote on the Jaladutta, some of the most beautiful things that Prabhupada ever wrote, where he talks to Krishna, he prays to Krishna. He told us to try to just understand that Krishna consciousness would not always be easy. And then he said, three things are required for success in Krishna consciousness, and you must always rely on them. Enthusiasm, will or determination, and patience. So, yeah, we're all here because of because Srila Prabhupada followed the order of his spiritual master. And anyway, I've reflected a little on his departure from India and arrival in America in early days in India. I guess I'll tell one story and then we can see. But was that same year, 1971, my parents came to visit me in Calcutta. And at that time, I was I was very thin and, you know, somewhat sickly. And my parents came basically to try to get me back. And they came into, you know, I brought them into Srila Prabhupada's room. And he's spoken a very interesting way. It really, he was saying how he was, how he had a pharmacy in Allahabad, and how Motilal Nehru, who was the father of Jawaharlal Nehru, who was the first Prime Minister of India, used to come to his shop. And he was a made in England man. If the same medicine could be available made in India, but he would pay, you know, 10 times the price to get the version made in England. And then he said how, you know, Gandhiji wanted every family to contribute one young man to the freedom movement. And so Motilal Nehru was, you know, confiding in Srila Prabhupada that Jawaharlal Nehru was like a useless fellow, and so he was thinking of sending him to the freedom movement. Then he became the first Prime Minister of India. So through this very sort of interesting story, Srila Prabhupada was sort of cutting away at my father's prejudices and conceptions. So anyway, then they came to the point that they wanted me to come back. And my father said that he wanted to establish a trust for me with $1 million, which was a lot of money back then. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, you can send the papers and your son will sign. So then my mother brought up about my health. You know, she was very concerned about my health, and she said that she wanted me to come home because I was so thin and weak in India. And, you know, in those days people had the idea if you didn't eat meat, you couldn't get enough protein. Right? You had to eat meat. So, Srila Prabhupada's, his sister was there, Pishima. So he had like a bowl of sandesh, which is, you know sandesh? Yeah, it's a sweet. It's made from milk, which is turned into paneer. You know paneer?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, when my mother saw that it wasn't looking like I would be coming, so she began to weep, and so Prabhupada had his sister give her these sandesh and asked her to eat, and he said, you know, these are very high in protein. They're made from paneer. And then he said to me that you should eat 2 dozen sandesh and rasgulla every day. So then then Prabhupada said, okay, leave your son with me for 6 months, and when I come to the West in 6 months, I'll bring him with me. And that was about October. So I said to my father, I mean, everyone was there, but that just see how intelligent Srila Prabhupada is, that when it's cool and pleasant, I mean, when it's like, yeah, warm and pleasant in India, he stays in India, and then when it gets too hot in India, and when it's pleasant in the West, then he goes to the West. So by then, my father was actually getting very enlivened by Srila Prabhupada's association. And he said, actually, your master is very intelligent. And then Srila Prabhupada said, well, your son is very intelligent because he has understood my motive. Means to be where the weather is always good. Mm-hmm. And my father said to Prabhupada, no, actually, you are very intelligent. And then Srila Prabhupada said, well, I guess I must be intelligent, otherwise how could I attract so many intelligent young men like your son? So that's sort of how it ended. And as we were leaving Srila Prabhupada's room, my father said to me, I can say two things about your master. He's a brilliant organizer, and he really knows how to deal with people. And in my father's system of values, those were like the highest compliments. So, from Calcutta, eventually I went to Madras. And in Madras, you know, I was living in different people's homes, and I gained a lot of weight. And when Srila Prabhupada came, we organized a program for Srila Prabhupada, and when he came and he saw I'd gained so much weight, he said, you should take a picture of yourself and send it to your mother. Yeah. He hadn't forgotten. So yeah, he was very, very kind, very personal. Years later, yeah, maybe like three years later, I actually did get sick, and Srila Prabhupada said that that I won't be able to get better if I stay in Bombay. So, you know, came to America. And while I was there, my uncle came to meet me, and I introduced him to Srila Prabhupada. My uncle was a medical doctor. And he was very disappointed with the medical profession, because he felt that the doctors were just after money and they weren't so sincere. And he was just like opening up to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada was just listening. I mean, I don't know really how long the conversation went, but maybe a half hour. And in the half hour, Srila Prabhupada hardly said a few words, but just listening to my uncle. And then the meeting ended. And as, so my uncle got up and I was walking him out of the room. And he said, he said, "My God, I've never met anyone like him." And he said, "And his face, I must get a photo of him." So, yeah, Srila Prabhupada could touch people's hearts. I think just by his bhakti, by his love, his compassion. He hardly said anything. So now, would you like to say anything, or does anyone have any questions or comments or requests?
Thank you so very much for sharing your reflections and your realizations about Srila Prabhupada. And I was listening, I wanted to hear what you had to say. And I was listening closely, and I was thinking, as you were speaking, I was becoming inspired. I was thinking, you know, I could work a little harder in Krishna consciousness. I could really, really push on a little stronger if I would just focus. And I was thinking of the purport of what you were saying and how true it is about association and the change. Because later on I was thinking, well, even I'm feeling that I want to do more. I said, and I'm just in this association for such a small amount of time. So, I mean, I do know that the process works, but it's very nice when the association is there because that inspiration comes back. I don't know what's going to happen, but I want to tell you that I do feel that just from hearing you speak, that I'm going to try harder. I'm going to try a little harder to, you know, work on myself and to continue to assist Prabhupada's mission.
Well, that's nice. Yeah. I mean, everything for Krishna, nothing for me. That's like, that's a high standard. We can work towards it. Yeah. That's real happiness.
Could you share a time that you saw Prabhupada his happiest?
Well, he was. He was happy when new books came out. He was very happy. And, he was happy when people took to Krishna consciousness. I think one day, I mean, it's hard to say his happiness, but he was definitely in a very ecstatic mood. It was in Amritsar, in Punjab. And that day, he had 7 programs. I mean, earlier on, you know, like the senior devotee in the party had sort of asked Prabhupada to slow down because we couldn't keep up with him. So Prabhupada said, "All right, I'll accept only 2 programs per day." But at this day, somehow he accepted 7. And Prabhupada, it was sort of like that, the host would send a car for Prabhupada. and we would go by rickshaw. So he would move much faster than we did. And usually, I mean, because he was going so fast, you know, one place, like by the time we got there, he was just getting ready to leave. And, but the last program, it was just in a hall. You know, some were like in temples. You went to the Golden Temple in Amritsar, but it was just a hall. But from Prabhupada's mood and from the atmosphere, I could feel that the people were like devotees. And he spoke to them in Hindi. And by some mercy, I felt like I could understand what he was saying, even though I didn't even know Hindi. Of course, he quoted some verses that I was somewhat familiar with, but I just felt I could understand it. And he was really speaking in a very sort of intimate way about Krishna. And, then the program ended, and he went back to we were staying at an ashram, Maivadi ashram. They were having a program, and we were like part of the program. So all of this was going on during the day when, you know. So he came back. We were all like sleeping out on these rope mattresses. Not mattresses, beds. Yeah. Like a wooden frame with ropes. And
something
called Chavoy. It could be.
Charpai. Four legs.
Charpai. Okay. And so he got back before we did because he was in a car. And when I got back, I saw the light was still on in his room. We were sleeping out in the courtyard, or in the open area, and they gave him like a little, not a house, sorry. And he had one side, and the other side was for the ladies, and the men were just sleeping on charpais in the, either there's like a big common hall for sadhus or else in the courtyard. So, you know, I didn't think, I wasn't sure if it was proper or not, but I just really wanted to see what was going on in Srila Prabhupada's room. So I sort of crouched and snuck up to the window and looked in. And he was reclining on his bolster, and he was listening to the tape recording of the talk that he had just given. And I could understand he was like relishing the association of Krishna from the talk with that special audience. So, I mean, yeah, I think in terms of like outward displays of happiness, I think it's really like when a new book was published or there was some like victory in the preaching. But he was clearly in ecstasy. He didn't want to go to sleep. He was just relishing that ecstasy from that association of Krishna in the form of that talk. I'll tell another story. It wasn't with me personally. But Srila Prabhupada had a disciple. He never really took initiation for a certain reason. Named Peter Burwash, who was a tennis pro. And he started a business of like teaching tennis, and also he was a good motivational speaker, and you know, it's just. But anyway, so back in those early days in Hawaii, whenever he would meet Srila Prabhupada, he would give him $300, which was quite a lot. And Srila Prabhupada would take it, you know, just put it on the corner of his table and say thank you. No big thing. And as Peter describes it, he was, like, his ego was a little offended, you know, it's $300, it's a lot of money. And all he does is say thank you and puts it in the corner of his table. So one time, Prabhupada made a short visit to Honolulu, and he just stopped over, and then he was leaving in the morning for the airport. And the devotees phoned Peter and said, Prabhupada's here, he's going to be leaving soon. You know, if you want to see Srila Prabhupada, you have to come right away. So he came rushing. And Srila Prabhupada was in the car, about to leave for the airport. And Peter came, like, running, like, up to the window of the car. And Prabhupada rolled down the window and looked at him, like, yes. And Peter, you know, put his hand in his pocket to take out the $300. Well, it turns out that in the rush, he forgot the money. And there was nothing in his pocket. And he was, like, digging and deep and, like, looking. And he came up with something like 37 cents. So, and Prabhupada's looking at him out the window, yes, you wanted to say something? So Peter gave Prabhupada the 37 cents. And Prabhupada made such a big thing of it. Like, you know, thank you very much, and this is so nice. Because all the other times, like, there was some false ego, you know, some pride. So Prabhupada didn't. But at this day, there's, like, no false ego, no false pride. He was just in a panic. He wanted to do some service. He didn't have anything to offer. He just wanted to offer something. And so Prabhupada could feel his sincere desire, free from false pride and ego. And he made, like, a real big thing of it. Thank you so much. And I'm so grateful to you. So, yeah, he could do that. He knew what was in your heart and what you needed. He wasn't, you know, bewildered or impressed or allured by material things. He would accept it, and he was in Krishna's service, but he really wanted to see your devotion develop.
So was there ever a time that you felt that maybe you disappointed Prabhupada in any kind of service?
I recalled one incident just yesterday because I was visiting with Satsvarupa Maharaj. For a while, he was Prabhupada's secretary, and Prabhupada came to Juhu. And at that time, I sort of confided in Satsvarupa Maharaj that I think Prabhupada's not pleased with me. He said, no, I don't think that's the case. He never said anything to indicate that he wasn't pleased with you. I think he is pleased with you. But he did say that you have too much to do. And once, I confided in Yamuna Devi, the same type of thing. It was on a train, actually, in those early days in India. And she said, I don't think there's really anything wrong. just you have to be more patient. But once once I forget what mistake I made a mistake, and Srila Prabhupada was instructing me, correcting me and instructing me. And I guess I was like lamenting, I was like looking down, and he said, you know, I don't want you to lament. I just want you to hear what I'm saying so you learn. And I definitely made mistakes, and he definitely did. But I don't know if I would say he was displeased with me, because I think he knew, my intentions were good, but there was one time, it was like a huge blunder. It was very early in India. We were just starting to make life members. And we printed receipt books. And it was like a big thing to like hold on to the receipt. It was like a major thing to hold on to the receipt books. And this, I was in Delhi then. It was me, Bruce, who became Bhanu Swami, and Gopal, and Gurudas and Yamuna. And I don't know what happened. I went out and to meet people, and when I got back to our little apartment, not apartment even, but couldn't find the receipt book. So I went back, and I had been in Chandni Chowk, which is like a real congested part of old Delhi. I was just retracing my steps, everywhere. I just couldn't find it. So I came back. Gurudas, Prabhupada wasn't there, but he ordered Gurudas to go to Vrindavan to see some property. So it was just us with Yamuna. And I had to come out with it, but I lost the receipt book. She was very grave. And she was like one of my best friends, but she was very grave. And she said, it is a serious offense. So, we had to inform Srila Prabhupada, and then he said we have to put a notice in the newspaper that this has been lost, and these are the receipt numbers. Because he didn't want people to collect in our name. And if anyone comes with this, it's not us. And that was like the whole thing. So that was like weighing on my mind. And then from Vrindavan, we joined Srila Prabhupada in Indore. And I think the first devotee who saw me, his name is Hansaduta Das, he said something like, what kind of a bozo are you? how do you expect Srila Prabhupada to run a worldwide movement with, idiots like you? So, it's sort of, anyway. So then, I went to see Srila Prabhupada. Our group, our little party from Delhi went to see Srila Prabhupada. And I said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm really sorry about my mistake. And he said, what mistake? It's like I guess he knew I'd done enough repentance, suffered enough humiliation. But anyway, that was like a big one at that time. Yeah.
Can I ask another question, Mark?
Yeah.
Did you ever meet any of Prabhupada's relatives when you were in India, like family members from before he took sannyas?
Well, the main one was his sister, Pishima. She was there a lot, even that time when my parents came. And, there were a lot of nice exchanges with her. More in Calcutta. Like she would, she liked to cook for her brother. And it was like quite rich. And, like mustard seed oil and everything. And sometimes she would like smuggle it in. Like she'd I guess wrap it in bring it in some bag or wrap it in newspaper and put it under her sari. And she would also bring for the devotees. And so, she'd go in the back room. Because I told you how much the devotees were really starving. And she'd take out all these nice Bengali preparations and give them to the devotees. And I met his son, Vrindavan Chandra. He's a nice person. He had a bookstore in Calcutta. And, to engage him and encourage him, Prabhupada gave him his books, to sell. And I did meet them. Yes, Prabhupada.
Bhagavan, I'm curious about if you know about Prabhupada's children, if they ever took initiation, or what happened to his children, grandchildren.
Well, his direct children didn't, but some other relatives, like maybe nieces, nephews, granddaughter, they took initiation. There are quite a few of Prabhupada's relatives who are initiated in India. Bhakti Naomi, did you raise your hand or was that?
No, I was just.
Stretch.
Fly.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay, that's all right. A lot of mistakes. Your question, I'm remembering more and more. But there was one. I won't even go into the details of the mistake, I guess I have to give a little bit. Anyway, no, I won't. So I came to Mayapur. I had gone to Africa to raise funds for Juhu. And I didn't do very well, and there was a defect in my approach. which Srila Prabhupada pointed out, the main defect was that the people there weren't rich where I went. And he sent me a letter, but I only got it, so he sent me a letter, because I wrote and I described how I was preaching, and it was like really very intelligent, if I say so, very intelligent, and you know, people really liked me, and they all like wanted to contribute, but they didn't have very much money, so they didn't give that much. So Prabhupada sent this letter, and in the letter he said that one man asked his friend, "Are you intelligent?" So his friend started looking in his pockets. And he said, "Why are you looking in your pockets?" And he said, "Well, if there's money, then I'm intelligent." So Prabhupada wrote, "You know that you've gone so far, and you've preached very intelligently. But if there's no money, where's the intelligence?" And then he said that actually everything is working by my intelligence and your cooperation. And I think what happened was, I could only put it together later, but I think what happened was he wasn't really that keen on my going. He had sent me earlier to West Africa, and I did really well, so I thought this would be like a repeat, but it wasn't. And it's funny, because like just as I was about to leave, he was arriving at the airport in Bombay, and I saw him, and I don't know, I guess I expected him to be like more friendly or encouraging. So then maybe I thought, in retrospect, maybe he really wasn't that keen, but maybe thought like I was attached to it. And so he sort of went along with it. So anyway, this all came out. So then I returned to India. It was the time of the Mayapur festival. I came to Mayapur, and I went to see Srila Prabhupada, and sort of like, you know, like, it was like, "So how much did you collect?" So I gave the figure. And then he said, "Couldn't you have collected that much just staying in Bombay?" I said, "Yeah, I probably could have." So I felt like very like embarrassed that I had somehow not done the right thing. And Gopal Krishna Maharaj was there. So, you know, I was sort of took it seriously. And so I came out in the hallway and I was like saying like how bad I felt to Gopal Krishna Maharaj. And Gopal Krishna Maharaj said, "You know, don't worry." Like, sort of like, Prabhupada knows what we're like. It's like, it's okay. You know, that's the way we are. Prabhupada knows it. So like, it's okay. It's just the way it is. But this is all like to train us. But I think underlying, he had, you know, great affection and love and care for his disciples. It was just to make us better servants.